It's 12 minutes after 8 o'clock with the Bill and Joel Morning Show, the Wednesday, March 8th edition, well underway now, and we're glad that you're along with us as we continue. We're also glad to have Dr. Brent Sharp with us, who checks in with us each month with some great information on medical issues that we might not think about, or if we do, perhaps we're too timid to bring them forward when, in this case especially, we really should.
Yeah, we're talking with Dr. Sharp, of course. Well, and I guess today is, Bill and I are out of the loop on this one here today, Dr. Sharp.
Well, good morning, guys.
Good morning, because you're talking about female pelvic prolapse with and without incontinence. So where do we begin with this? I guess the definition would be first and foremost.
Right, and this is a very common condition. Pelvic organ prolapse typically obviously occurs in women. It's a herniation of the pelvic organs beyond the vaginal wall, and a lot of women are just too scared or too afraid of some of the myths or their concerns to come in and seek treatment. And hopefully by today we can cover a few of the topics and undo some of those myths and some of their concerns, because it does affect a lot of women. In fact, I was a little surprised to find it is the most common inpatient procedure performed in women over the age of 70 for almost the past 30 years.
Wow.
I was really taken surprised by that. Exactly.
What sorts of complications or costs can come along if they don't get it addressed, if they're too timid to come forward?
Well, they can, obviously deal with urinary incontinence and some of the pelvic pain. It can be actually significantly detrimental to the woman's body image or even their sexuality, which can cause some problems within the marriage. Bowel dysfunction is very common, and that can be very embarrassing for ladies who don't come seek treatment. The main things medical we think about are, again, the urinary incontinence, the things that come along with the incontinence. But also it can be so bad that it actually obstructs the kidneys as organs prolapse out. It actually can ink the tubes that drain the kidneys and lead to renal failure. So it's something that definitely women ought to address and come seek treatment for.
We'll go back to the myths, though, really quick on this, because these things happen in, I would imagine, every medical procedure or something like that. Can you cover some of those really quick?
Right. Some of the myths, a lot of women think that, they can't have prolapse if they've had not had a hysterectomy, and that's actually false. They can. They think that all the prolapse surgery is going to entail or have to include removing the uterus, which is probably one of the bigger things that I deal with, because in fact, actually, you don't have to do that, and it is typically my preference not to, because removing the uterus for women has some negative impact on their lives, and then they don't want that. It also has some increased risk. If you do this surgery without that, you end up taking a lot of the risk off of the table for the woman, and you also speed the recovery. So that's probably the biggest thing I'd like to address is if you have pelvic prolapse, you do not have to have the uterus removed.
Well,
this other biggest myth out there real quickly is about the transvaginal mesh. Every woman hears this on an ad or the internet or those kind of things. Not every surgery has to be done with mesh, and most surgeries today probably are not associated with mesh, and they are not sometimes done vaginally. And that's not the approach that I truly choose.
So how do you go about this? Is this something you've got to be hospitalized for? Does it take a long recovery?
Actually not. I actually do a robotic abdominal sacral colpopexy. It's a fancy name. In other words, we're basically going to restore the normal anatomy in the female pelvis by placing the vagina and the normal support mechanisms back for the organs so that they don't prolapse out. Again, it is done robotically, which is minimally invasive, done with a camera and small little incisions. Women actually can go home the same day, and I would say probably about more than 85 to 90% of my ladies don't take pain pills after the night of surgery, which is always remarkable.
Wow.
And you and I can relate, because us guys don't deal with pain very well.
No.
But thank God our counterparts do.
Yes.
Ain't it the truth?
Somebody
yes.
has to hold our hands when we're writhing,
Exactly. So it's it's a very common condition. Like I said, it accounts for $300 million of the healthcare. We're in this debate about healthcare and how we pay for things, and we're all looking at finances. This is $300 million of healthcare just associated with this one condition that that women deal with mostly, and should be addressed.
Are there any as far as a woman's concern, is it happen more often? You said over 70, this procedure happened a lot, but is it tied to age? Is it tied to lifestyle? Is it tied to, how do you, what are the contributing factors to someone having this?
Right. It is. As you get older, you increasing your risk for it. But this can occur in young women. I've seen young women as an age of 30. Now, obviously, childbearing age is not that common because of the muscles are typically stronger. But the act of childbearing or childbearing is a risk factor. If you've had a hysterectomy, you're actually increasing your risk for pelvic prolapse because of some of the support mechanisms are being taken along with the organ of the uterus being removed. If you have a family history, you're actually 2.5 times more likely to have pelvic prolapse if you have a family history of that in your family. So these are things that women should be aware of, not something they should live in fear of, but if they experience those symptoms of pelvic pains or what is the most common is a bulge in that area, they should seek treatment or at least seek advice because there are, we talked about the surgical option, but not everything has to be done surgically. There are non-surgical options.
Well, this is really good information today. I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And I want to thank you guys because past couple months I've seen a few people that have heard this show. One of them, a man, some of the things that we've talked about came in and actually is getting straining for his heart just because of what he heard here. And I think that you guys do a great service to our community. And I just want to say thank you.
Well, we appreciate those people listening and utilizing your services. Thanks, Dr. Brent. Appreciate that a lot. Hope you have a great week.
You have a great week too, guys.